Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Here we've got an overwintering dome. This is very typical. They are very hardy. Normally to overwinter, they will seek a hiding place, someplace that gives them a little bit of protection from the weather. And you can see that this gnome is chosen behind this rock. Last fall, it went undetected and unnoticed. It was able to overwinter. And you can see that now it's becoming quite large gnome and quite a nuisance, quite a problem. If left unchecked, they can outcompete other lawn ornaments and other parts of the landscape. Here we see a gnome that has taken up residency in a pagoda. This particular gnome overwintered in this pagoda, and if left unchecked, it can destroy this particular lawn ornament.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees. Our business is people and their love for trees. And by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers. And by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. He's the best thing to happen to the environment since the solar-powered hamster wheel. Great. Now he's putting hamsters out of business. Here he is, Mike Novak.
And the reason I'm doing it is because those are union hamsters.
No.
So they deserve to have their jobs.
Up Rodents Local 101?
They deserve to have their jobs.
Yeah.
Do you know what the hamster pension is like? Oh, give me a break.
Well, what about the ball? Is it just the wheel hamsters, or what about the ones that go in the little plastic ball?
I don't care. As long as they're...
It's recycled plastic. You're all right with that.
Exactly.
Okay.
But as long as
we're clear.
As long as the hamsters are not organized, I'm fine with it. As long as I can oppress them by being the man and they have no collective bargaining rights, then I'm fine with those hamsters.
Okay.
The minute they get uppity.
Well, maybe if we threw them some genetically engineered alfalfa, we could, you know, flip the tables here a little bit.
Well, then they would end up like the genetically engineered salmon and grow to monstrous size in 3 weeks.
And then take over the world and
it'll be the hamster apocalypse. We were talking about that the other week. One of the quotes that I didn't bring up that I thought was pretty amazing, and it sort of puts it in perspective, you know, there's that GE salmon that this company wants to unleash on the American public. Oh, boy, can't wait to get my hands on that. Hey, can't wait to put some tartar sauce on that baby. But the salmon grows three times faster than normal or something like that.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And the quote that somebody else said, well, if your child was suddenly growing three times faster than it should, wouldn't that give you pause? Wouldn't that alarm you?
Didn't they make a Robin Williams movie about that where he grew four times faster than everyone? He was, you know, 10 years old, but looked like he was 40. It's called Jack. There was a movie about that. And everyone's
ahead
like,
of its time,
yeah,
obviously.
Very much so. And they're like, that's not right.
No. Well, I'm glad that the folks, and I'm not going to go too much into this, but the folks marching in the streets all over the country and still in. Are we still not getting Twitter up there?
No. Yeah.
Okay. Memo. I'm going to get in trouble for this, too.
You are going to get in trouble.
I know it. I'm going to get in trouble. Memo, WCPT, WCPT, Chicago's Progressive Talk. Can we update these computers?
They're working on it. I was assured.
How long does it take?
I was assured. I don't know. There's
lots of
computers.
I mean, we're trying to get it. We can't even get on Twitter. Give me a break.
You'll get there.
Eventually?
It's just the emphasis on eventually. It could be nice.
Hello?
It could be.
Hello? Hello? Memo.
Yeah.
WCPT, please.
Yeah.
God in heaven, please update the computer.
They are.
Please.
They're working on it. Please. I assure you. Got good. We
all
got
right.
good
and now,
folks.
And now I'm going to get a memo.
Yeah, yeah. It's but like, that, you know, you know, but
all I
got to
say is that
it's really a web.
I'm just trying to establish my reputation here as, you know, independent. Fiercely independent here. We're live, we're local.
That's what we like about progressive brokered radio.
Exactly, progressive brokered radio. Boy, could we have any more caveats?
Could you hear the asterisk in that? So I was like, where was the ding?
You mean asterisk.
That's, oh, did I mess that up?
Yes, you did.
I'm sorry. Forgive me, please. See? Don't hurt me, brokered man.
And don't forget, I can still shut off your mic.
I know.
Even though Mark Munger is the one
answering the phones and driving
the ship. Well, actually, I'm driving it. He's the co-pilot.
Yes.
And you're just the passenger.
I'm the pretty flight attendant that walks around and gives everybody candy.
Well, where's the candy, baby?
It's in my desk, actually. I can go get some.
Go back up to
I've
the
got
front
Hershey
of...
Kisses.
All right. Lots going on in the show. You couldn't tell, by the way. We're just tap dancing here. Mm. As a matter of fact, why don't we get our guests on the phone there, Mr. Munger. And we're going to start with, well, next Saturday is the first day of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. Right here in our fair city. Guess what? I'm not going to be there.
What?
I'm going to be in Michigan. Yeah. At
I can't imagine a flower show without Mike Novak.
Well, I will be there at some point during the week. I'll be there on the 9th, which is the following Wednesday, the 9th of March. No opening day. You know where I'm going? I'm going to Fernwood. Fernwood Botanical Gardens in Michigan, in Niles, Michigan. It's either Niles or Buchanan. It's sort of halfway between, I guess. Chris Woods is going to be speaking there, and we're going to have him on in just a second. Caroline is the executive director of the Fernwood Botanical Garden.
And why are we going to Michigan?
Because
what are they doing?
They're doing a day-long symposium, and it's going to feature not only me and Chris Woods, but Beth Botts. And Roy Diblick. It's like some of my favorite.
Ooh, yeah.
So my feeling is, hey, you folks who are going to go to the garden show, skip that. Go out to... So not only have I dissed the radio station...
Now you're dissing the Chicago
Flower and Garden Show.
Wow.
Hey,
well, did you eat your Grumpy Flakes this morning?
You betcha.
Ah.
Second hour, and it takes me to a couple of new things on... the website, MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net. You should see the way Mark Munger tried to spell my name to log in today.
And he's learning.
He's going to take offense now. Yes, sir, Mr. Munger.
I spelled it the way it sounds.
He spelled it phonetically. We're audio-motivated people,
N-O-V-A-C?
You know.
N-O-V-A-C? Yeah, that's not the way it sounds.
I made you an American.
N-O-V-O-C-K.
All right, Mark, I'm going to shut off your microphone now.
See what he does? He dangles it in front of you like a cat and a mouse.
I'm just a Bill O'Reilly here. Shut off his mic. Shut off his mic. Shut it off. Oh, wait. I have control.
Yes, you do.
So I got to yell at myself. Shut off his mic. All right. So on the homepage at MikeNovak.net, MikeNovak.net, thank you very much, we have a video that I took the other day when Mark and I and my friend Patrick went up to Bartlett Ravine, which is part of this wonderful area that used to be just called Fort Sheridan. Up along the northern suburbs of Chicago. It's now called the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve, or at least parts of it. We'll talk about that. Jerry Edelman, who's the CEO and president of Openlands, will be here. And Openlands site manager Amy Collins, who was with us on that tour and is in the video. And you can see the walk up Bartlett Ravine that I've posted on YouTube, and it's now on the homepage of MikeNovak.net. And the guy who's doing most of the talking there is Bob McKeer, who's not going to be here in studio, but he's just a great guy. And it was wonderful to go see this and on a beautiful, beautiful winter day. I mean, it's going out into nature in the winter can sometimes just be awe-inspiring, crisp and cold, and we were crunching in the snow. It's really cool. So we will talk about the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve And if you get a chance, go take a look at the video that I've posted at MikeNovak.net. And in the Good Growing segment today, Rob Gardner from The Local Beat, and the reason I've got them up there is because they have a brand new list for 2011 of CSAs, which is Community Supported Agriculture. But as you know, Heather, it also stands for Canadian Space Agency.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case...
Thank you, Mike Novak.
Don't give it away. Shh. But Rob's going to talk about that new list of CSAs in the Chicago area. And then finally, last but not least, also on the homepage, thanks to intrepid green reporter Leah Petrusiak, and, of course, webmaster, the irrepressible and oh-so-lovely Kathleen Thompson, we have a brand new feature on MikeNovak.net. It's called Chicago Green Events Calendar. Now, what's cool about this... Oh, and I see that Kathleen's been doing her magic here. It's I don't list the events. I list the websites that list the events. So you can go to my green calendar and see, for instance, Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, which has... information on seminars, outings, garden talks throughout the Midwest. I've got Fresh Taste up there, which has farmers markets, recycling days, and all kinds of different things. I've got the list from A Fresh Squeeze. I've got the Chicagoland Environmental Network, Good Food for All, Mindful Metropolis, and on and on and on. And pretty much even One Seed Chicago is listed there. But just a bunch of places where you can find green events of one sort or another. You just go to MikeNovak.net/greenevents.htm or just link to it from the homepage. So my thanks to Kathleen and Leah for helping pull all of that together, because I think it's going to be a really great resource for folks who just want to know what's going on, well, in what's green throughout the area. All right, let's get this show on the road. I'm going to go to line one and bring in Chris Woods. How are you, Chris?
Good morning. I'm well. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm fabulous. And where are you talking to me from?
I'm actually talking from Thousand Oaks, which is north of Los Angeles, just about half an hour, 45 minutes north of L.A. And at 7 o'clock this morning, I was up waiting for you, and I was outside, and we have frost, which is very unusual for us. We have some of the lowest temperatures that California's had since I don't know when. And because we're Californians and we complain about the weather all the time, everybody's freezing out here. And it's, 35 degrees.
Wow. That's actually pretty cold out there. I mean, it's it's about the same thing around here. I don't know exactly what the temperature is right now in Chicago, but tell you what, Mark will track it down for me, and I'll... You know what I can do, Mark? I can just look on my cell phone. It's got it right here. So, temperature in Chicago... is 33 degrees.
Okay,
so we've only got you beat by two.
Yeah, well, yeah, but the oranges don't like it. You don't have that many orange groves up in Chicago that much. I do know, or avocados. So I think some of the growers up in the valleys here, up in the higher elevations, have been putting on their wind machines and watering machines to try and keep the frost off the fruit. Last night it was quite cold.
My goodness. Yeah, I bet they had the smudge pots and those things going in the... And sometimes they just water them so that the fruit will freeze because it protects...
Yeah,
that's
right.
The fruit,
but mostly they're using wind machines to move the air along faster, so the frost doesn't settle on the fruit. But you know what? Again, it's California. This afternoon we'll be in shorts, wandering around the beach. So I wouldn't feel too sorry for it.
Well, except that I do feel sorry for the growers, because they've got to scramble for those few precious hours when the crop might get damaged. And
the good news is that it's far enough along in the season that the citrus won't be damaged, but the avocado flowers, avocados are blooming now for next year, might get a little damaged. We'll see.
No, you can't do that to my avocados. I need avocados.
Well, there'll still be plenty. It's been a good season so far.
Has it really? Okay.
Yeah.
Let's also go to line two and bring in Carol Line, who's the executive director of Fernwood Botanical Gardens. And now I have to ask you, Carol, are you actually in Niles or are you actually in Buchanan, Michigan? It's kind of hard to figure out.
It is. It's a bit confusing. We're very close to... Oh, good morning, by the way.
Good morning to you, and say hello to Chris.
Yes. Hello, Chris. Chris,
I'm
good.
Hi, Carol.
Friend.
How are you?
Oh, it's good to hear you. I'm doing well.
Good.
I'm talking from Buchanan this morning, which is about 4 miles from Fernwood,
mm-hmm.
Just across the St. Joe River. Niles is our official address, which is actually about 12 miles from the garden, so it is confusing.
Oh, okay. So really, really, it's closer to Buchanan.
True.
But if you said that, nobody would know what you were talking about, right? What's a Buchanan, Michigan? Come on.
I would like to say that we're 90 minutes from the loop, but you corrected me the other day, so. Perhaps 95. We're 95 minutes from the loop.
Listen, all I was saying is you were saying you're 90 minutes from the loop, and you might very well be. I'm just always leery of people who say places like Niles and Buchanan, oh, don't worry, it's 90 minutes from Chicago. And then it 2.5 hours later, you know, when you finally get to your destination, you think, well, what happened here? And so I know that I know how fast you drive, Carol.
Okay. Never mind.
Your secret's out. But also, if it's 90 miles to Soldier Field, well, that's different because I still have to get up to Logan Square. That's
okay.
I've had somebody tell me, and we talked about this the other day. I've had people say, it's 90 miles. It's 90 minutes to Milwaukee. You know what, folks? It's not. Okay. It's a lot farther than that. It takes longer. But you have pulled together, Carol, a wonderful seminar next Saturday, and you're dragging me out of Chicago on the first day of the Chicago Flower and Garden Show. I won't even see it probably. I don't know when. Certainly not on the first day, maybe not even on the second day, because I'm on the first day. I'm going to be out at Fernwood, and I'm very happy to be there. And you've got great people like Chris.
Absolutely.
Chris is the only one I don't know, but because I am friends with your other speakers, Beth Botts, who sometimes fills in for me here on the Mike Novak Show, and my buddy Roy Diblick, who is a god as far as I'm concerned. Here in the Midwest when it comes to growing plants and understanding plant communities.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also one of the nicest people you'll ever meet in your life.
Right.
But I noticed that what you've done with me, and then as soon as I complain here, because I've started off the day complaining about everything, so I might as well complain about this too.
Oh, please do.
You put me on after lunch when everybody's digesting. And I know that's on purpose, because you figure I'm going to rile them all up. And keep them entertained so that then when I'm done, Roy can come in and do his thing. And,
that's the plan.
And they'll be paying attention. And Chris, you've got actually the premiere slot because it's just before lunch.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. They put me on before lunch so that then I could have a nap after lunch while you're speaking.
Yeah, well, so will the rest of the crowd, okay? So,
yeah, I've been in that spot many times. You have to really, the after-lunch crowd, you have to really warm them up.
And so tell me, what are you going to do to warm up the crowd as they prepare for lunch, Chris? What are you focusing on?
Well, I'm going to tell some bad jokes, fundamentally. I'm going to be probably the least practical speaker. I'm going to talk about the history of gardens from China, the earliest gardens in China, up to, you know, our modern gardens in the United States, and run through some of the gardens that I worked in England and some of the gardens that I've worked in the United States, ending up in California, which, of course, has no practical relevance to you gardening up there in the Midwest. So basically my talk hopefully will be entertaining with lots of pretty pictures and absolutely no information.
Hey, wait a second. That's my gig. You can't do that.
All right, that'll make two of us for the sandwiching the lunch time. So the people with the real information will get the points, you know, the good credit scores at the end, and hopefully we'll get entertaining but not very useful.
So you better come early and stay late. That's the mission.
That's right.
If you want to learn anything at Fernwood Botanical Gardens next Saturday. And what is the starting time for all of this, Carol?
Well, if you can start rolling in around 8:30, 8:45, we will feed you a bit, and you can all mingle. And I believe Beth Botts is starting at 9.
Okay.
Now that's 8 Chicago time.
Yes. Oh, that's true. Yeah, you gotta be careful about that because it is an hour earlier. And it's very confusing because if you go into Northwest Indiana to do talks, it's usually the same time. And then you get over to Michigan, and then you guys pull the switcheroo. You say, Chris, that you have nothing practical to relate to the audience. I'm betting, though, that a few people have been to some of the gardens you've been to. For instance, I've been to Kew in London. I mean, what an awesome place to go. But I've also been, and you'll appreciate this, Carol, I've been to the Huntington out in L.A., which you worked at, Carol.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Carol also worked at the Chicago Botanic Garden and a bunch of places. Have you, and I'm sure, Chris, you've been to the Huntington as well.
Absolutely.
It's a fabulous place, and Zone 5 gardeners really appreciate the Huntington because, what is that, 8, 9? What's the zone out there?
Yeah, I don't know. I never remember, but it's certainly 8 or 9. It's certainly, if they ever get any frost, that would be extremely unusual.
Right, and but the collections are magnificent. Lots of cactus and euphorbias and things like that are just unworldly.
Well, what I'm going to try and do is to show people where our history comes from, where our garden history comes from, and going from China to Italy to various places in England, and show people the influence of these other countries' gardens on our own gardens, both public and private, so that we know when we put hedges in and we use hedges as architectural forms for our gardens. To enclose our gardens, that comes very much from the walled gardens of medieval England, and then the 17th and 18th century gardens of Italy, and that's still being done. And so, the principles that were established hundreds of years ago still apply. And then I'm going to move into the kind of cottage garden aspect of things, which was kind of really invented by the English, and talk about color combinations and how simple they can be and how effective they can be with just three different plants, three different colors. So I'm going from some very elaborate kind of palatial gardens to little cottage gardens to show people some principles of garden design that, most of us don't live in palaces. I certainly don't. And I, Mike, I'm probably you don't, too. I don't know. But,
no, I do, actually. In Logan Square, it's the only castle in Logan Square in Chicago, as a matter of fact.
Yes, I've seen that one. And, we look at the French gardens and the formality of the French gardens, and that comes over to us in the United States in formal gardens, either domestic or public. I'm going to talk a little bit about sustainability, sustainable gardening in a way, in a kind of global way, and then just chat around and end it up, and hopefully people won't throw things at me.
Hey, listen, you're busted, pal. You already gave us some practical stuff there. I mean, it's good to understand why we do things and why hedges are important. I always wonder why folks want to plant arborvitae hedges in their yard. I always ask them, don't you like your neighbors? Don't you want to see them? It's And then what happens in the Midwest with an arborvitae hedge is the one in the middle dies.
Yeah, well, that's true everywhere. That's kind of a universal law.
Oh, is it?
Of arborvitae hedges. Yeah, there's always one brown one in the center.
And exactly.
Then and then you replace it with a 2 foot high one, and so it looks like bad dental work or something like that.
Oh, yeah, I always call it grandpa's teeth. So, you know.
Yeah, that's right.
But, you know, you come from Kew Gardens outside of London, and what was it like working there? I mean, I just thought it was a fabulous place. It's iconic, and I learned more about Eryngium there than I mean, that's where I really got my start on that. You guys have amazing collections of what they call sea holly here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been about 100 years since I worked at Kew, so it's hard for me to really remember. I remember that there were two reasons that I got into gardening. One was that I had a real love of plants, and the other one was that I had a real love of a woman who actually was a lab assistant at the Jodrell Laboratory at Kew, and I thought that I could win her love by gardening outside of her office window, which, you know, is what I did. And I was there for a month, and she and somebody else eloped, and they disappeared, and I was just stuck with horticulture, and I've been doing it ever since.
That is so sad.
Yes. But seriously, what I did learn, I mean, I was working as a gardener, learning, you know, basic gardening, and I was working with some of the world's experts, and I could go into the herbarium and see these wonderful collections of plants that you know, were collected in the 17th, 18th, 19th century, and I also learned about all kinds of things. I think the first thing I did was to plant lilies in a cottage garden and then tie up clematis and do basic gardening work. So I was surrounded by some very high-level and experienced gardeners. And,
Chris, what were you going to add in there, Carol?
No, I just said that Chris has done very, very well with his horticulture. So.
Well, yeah, you know, he has, though. You know, maybe unrequited love is the key to being a success.
Oh, well, I've had quite a lot of unrequited love, and I wouldn't call it successful. So, but it was just it led me on to other things, and I worked for the National Trust, which is the second largest landowner in the United Kingdom, and worked in some historic gardens, and helped restore a garden that's actually 300 years old, but was owned by the writer Rudyard Kipling, and we restored it to a Victorian garden, and that was interesting to do, to be able to read some of his notes on what the garden used to be like. And restore it, and worked and did various things like that. Then I came over to the United States because England was too small for me.
I know that's the rumor anyway. And you ended up outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, that's right.
At Chanticleer, which is a private estate, and you've just been wending your way around the world. I mean, you need to. You've gone from east to west, so you need to continue going west. So next stop would be Japan, right? And then China, and then back around.
Yes, that's right. We can do this program in 2 years from Beijing or somewhere like that. But I spent 20 years creating Shanik. It was a private estate, and the owner left it to a foundation, and I was the executive director, and like a kid in a sand pit, helped create, along with some really great staff, one of the great gardens of America. It's regarded as one of the great gardens of America.
If you say so yourself, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. No, that's okay. You're welcome.
You know, I've been gone there. I left there in 2003, came out to the West Coast because I always wanted to live out on the West Coast, and I've had various adventures on the West Coast, and I'm continuing to do so.
That, and by the way, that's Chris Woods, and he is one of the people, as you can tell, he is not shy, and he will be speaking this Saturday along with me, along with Beth Botts, along with Roy Diblick from Northwind Perennial Farm at Fernwood Spring Garden Symposium. I'm going to have to let you guys go, but before I do, you know, because Carol was just afraid I was going to call her on the carpet here during this interview because, it's such a hardball topic, you know, a garden symposium.
You never know.
You never know what I'm going to ask. But I want you to plug Fernwood a little bit for us, for people in Chicago who have never been there. There's great botanical gardens all over the Midwest. And why Fernwood?
Why Fernwood? Well, I came to Fernwood after working at some great gardens because I wanted to the opportunity to lead a garden. And I first saw the magic that was Fernwood when I was doing my undergraduate work at Purdue in horticulture many years ago. And it's a very sweet property, 105 acres. We're on the St. Joe River, quite beautiful. We're a great blend of cultivated gardens and natural areas. We have natural springs on the property and a tiny Japanese garden designed by Ben Oki, who's the happens to be the curator of bonsai at the Huntington Small World. And we have a beautiful herb garden and other cultivated spaces, art gallery. Art is a very important part of our history at Fernwood. And we have great camps for kids, art camp, nature camps in the summer, many good programs. And as it turns out, we're actually leading a trip to the Delaware Valley in June. So we'll get to see Chanticleer. And if I could just plug Chanticleer, I'd like to say that it was no doubt a beautiful estate before Chris came on the scene and Chris added the magic. And it is quite an outstanding garden.
Are you, by the way, Chris, are you going to have some photos from Chanticleer as well?
Yeah, one or two. Yeah, I'm certainly going to talk about Chanticleer as part of my, history. Basically, the story is, aside from historic gardens, it's the story of my career.
Okay. That, you know, if I did that, people, I would scare people if I did the story of my career because it's been so... It's kind of roundabout when it comes to horticulture. So my question is, are you to Carol, are you in the snow belt there? So in the winter, do you get blanketed quite a bit?
Yes. We're the buffalo of the Midwest. And I say that affectionately. I used to like winter a great deal, actually, even in Chicago. And we're still pretty deep here, deep and wide, I like to say.
You mean right now? There's still a lot on the ground there.
Yeah, there is. But we're going to be in the 40s this week, so by the time of the symposium, we should be able to see the winter aconite coming through and the snowdrops.
Oh, that's great! I'm looking forward to it. And again, it's if people want to sign up, they can go to my website, mikenovak.net. The links are there to the spring symposium. At Fernwood Botanical Gardens in Buchanan, lovely Buchanan, Michigan. And I say that with all fondness because I love Southwest Michigan. It's one of my favorite places to be, and I'm very happy to be there. And I'm looking forward to meeting you, Chris.
Yeah, and, likewise.
And we will have we'll have a great time.
Well, I look forward to it.
You will.
Thank you both for being on the show, and I will talk to you guys next Friday.
All right. Thank you very
much. Mike.
Take
Thank
care.
You,
bye-bye. Bye-bye. The Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. That was almost a segue from Carol about the weather because Rick DeMille weather is coming up in just a second. Now, what are you doing next year? I don't mean in general. I mean exactly a year from now, February 25th to March 3rd, 2012. I'll tell you what I'll be doing. I'll be on the Norwegian Cruise Line's Norwegian Sun to visit the Caribbean destinations of Nassau, St. Thomas, San Juan, Great Stirrup Cay, and more. And I want you to come with me. We'll be exploring spectacular Zone 11 gardens, you know, speaking of the various zones, the hardiness zones for plants. That's Zone 11 down there in those islands. And they're some of the most iconic tropical islands on the Northern Hemisphere. We'll be visiting gardens where orchids, bromeliads, and coconut palms are as common as Creeping Charlie is in the Midwest. Well, maybe in your lawn, not mine. I will be your genial host for this excursion, and I'll share my insights about Midwest gardening along the way. Believe me, we're going to have a great time, and I hope you'll be on board. Now, there's a couple of ways you can get more information. You can call CruiseWorks at 800-876-6664. 800-876-6664. Or log on to cruise-works.com. Or just write to me, Mike, at mikenovak.net, and I'll send you all the information you need. You know, it's on my website, too. On the homepage, you see the photo of the boat. Click on, and you'll see the wonderful photos of the places we're going to visit, including tropical rainforests and just Mountain High, spectacular gardens, and I hope you'll join me. I'm going to get a tan next February, and I think that you need to get one too.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Before we get to Rick DeMaio weather, I got a couple of tweets here. Today, by the way, is that today? Forest Park Community Garden Seed Swap is today. That's good. So I have had a couple of tweets. My Skinny Garden is tweeting on that, so is Snappy J Dog. So I wish you guys luck. I hope all goes well over at the Seed Swap. And if you're down that way, you ought to stop by. This is we're getting to the point where we're actually going to start planting things. I mean, you can do it indoors now and start getting your plants going. If you want some interesting seeds, head over to the Forest Park Community Garden Seed Swap. I don't have the address. I'll tell you what. Fire off that address to me on Twitter or an email, and I will announce that on the radio. Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Choosing a tree for your property is part art and part science. City trees have to tolerate some tough conditions, including wintertime road salt spray and runoff. Roots have a hard time penetrating Chicago-area soil, which is typically clayey with rocks and rubble mixed in. Some of it dates back to the Great Chicago Fire. Chicago soil also tends to be alkaline, which means it has high pH, making it hard for some trees to extract the essential nutrients they need, like pin oak and red maple trees. Meanwhile, asphalt streets and parking lots soak up heat, creating urban heat islands that put additional stress on trees in summer. And speaking of summer, well, what about winter? Chicago trees must be able to withstand extreme cold, too. The Care of Trees can help you make the right decisions about choosing a tree that is going to survive all of those conditions. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at where you want a tree. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let us immediately go to line one and bring in meteorologist Rick DeMaio. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Mike.
How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm sitting here eating my oatmeal, looking at a beautiful sunny Sunday morning, saying goodbye to the last official weekend of what we call meteorological spring in the weather community.
That's right.
Wait, what am I saying? The last official weekend of meteorological
winter.
I already have meteorological spring on my mind, which begins on Tuesday, March 1st.
And is it going to come in like a lion or a lamb or an aardvark?
It will come roaring in like a lion later on tonight. Yeah, as it normally does around here. Even though tomorrow is still February, we typically look at the last week of February very much like the first week of March, where you can get just about anything. Sometimes in a matter of a period of 48 hours, and that certainly appears the case later on tonight into tomorrow. Some very, very challenging weather awaits us for Monday morning commuters, Mike.
You know, it's been interesting. I've been watching a forecast in the last week or so, and it seems as though Mother Nature has the meteorologists a little off balance right now.
Yeah, and part of that is because the pattern is not only very active, but it seems like the storm track is just to the south of us, and you get these systems that basically become like slingshots out of the desert southwest, and sometimes they come through as what we call a fast-moving open low, where you basically have, if you think about, if you take your hand, okay, point your palm up towards the ceiling, and you have your thumb basically at around 2 o'clock and your fingers at around 10 o'clock, that's the kind of system that came through here early this week, and you just kind of like slide your hand from one side of your body to the other. Now when you have a big storm system like we had back in February, you could basically close your fingers, okay? So the
we're trying to do this in the studio, and it's really...
That's what's called the close low.
Okay.
Not only do you move that from, say, St. Louis to Indianapolis, but at the same time you're rotating it and then slowly kind of tipping it towards Grand Rapids. Those are the easy ones to forecast, but these fast-moving open lows or open waves... very difficult to nail down the timing of the precipitation, and usually the northern edge of your rain snow sections of your storms, the accumulation drops off very, very rapidly, and that was certainly the case Thursday night into Friday when we had basically a half inch of snow from Joliet northward through Chicago and the northern suburbs, and then in the areas of like southeastern sections of Cook County. Northeastern sections of at least southeastern areas of Will County, all of Kankakee County, northwest Indiana, had about 3 or 4 inches of snow. So most residents in Chicago woke up saying, hey, where's the snow that you promised me? But residents south of us said, hey, I got 3 or 4 inches. So not too sure what you guys up north are talking about. And it has been very challenging, and the forecast for later on tonight and tomorrow, I think even more challenging than the one that we had here on Thursday and Friday.
Well, we're still here in the studio, and there's a bunch of us with our thumbs in the air here trying to figure out the patterns. I have no idea what you just said, but...
You mean before when your hand is up in the air?
Exactly. I have no idea what that... But I'm sure it works for you, Rick, and that's the important thing.
I'll make it real simple.
No. It's okay.
Your hand is open. You move it across. That's a real tough forecast to get. When your hand is closed... and you move it slowly, the storm system is basically a circular storm and a little bit easier.
Got it. Okay. There we go.
There you go.
All right. Wait a second. Okay. I feel better.
Yeah.
But tonight...
too bad we're on radio right now. If we're on TV, it'd make a lot
you know,
of sense.
We'd be... People would be laughing and watching us. You know, that's why we need the webcam here, so I can do the webcam thing. And as you're doing all your goofy ideas about those storm tracks, we would just be following along.
There you go.
So it's possibility we're going to get some ice.
Yeah, this is kind of an interesting setup because the 1.3 inches of snow that we received Friday night into Saturday. Put us up to 29.0 inches for the month. That breaks the all-time record for the month of February, which was set back in 1896 when we had 27.8 inches. It put us up now to 56.3 inches for the season, fourth consecutive year where we've had over 50 inches, and now that is the sixth greatest snowfall ever for Chicago. And normally we get about 30 inches this time of the year, so obviously we're well above normal, and I think we can easily see about 2 to 4 inches of snow later on tonight. The timing of this is very, very difficult, and here's a couple of reasons why. A lot of sunshine today. Early will eventually fade behind some clouds, but I think enough sunshine will probably warm up the pavement, where when you get rain on top of warm pavement, it usually keeps that first inch of concrete and asphalt above freezing. So when we do get cold enough to turn the rain over to freezing rain and sleet, it'll probably have a little bit of a difficult time freezing before the snow develops. And interesting, the 27th of February has the same sun angle as we have on the 11th of October. And if you look at the climate data, the 11th of October typically in Chicago sees an average high temperature of 65. The average high temperature, though, for February 27th is only 39 because we're coming out of the winter season. And the ground doesn't really know that too much. As long as it's getting a fair amount of sunshine, that first inch of pavement and soil will warm up a little bit. So you have a lot more to consider in the latter half, or at least the last couple of weeks of winter, than you do early on. So the bottom line is sunshine this morning, clouds this afternoon, rain develops probably Probably right when Natalie Portman is receiving her Oscar for best performance in a leading role for a female. But probably about 9 o'clock tonight is when the rain begins. We'll probably have about maybe 3 or 4 hours of moderate to steady rain before we transition over to a little bit of sleet and freezing rain. And then we can easily see maybe 2 or 3 inches of very kind of wet, crusty snow between midnight tonight and early tomorrow morning before the system, you know, pulls itself out of here very quickly by about 7 o'clock in the morning. So what you see out there right now is a beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. Soak it up. Enjoy it as much as you can, because this time tomorrow morning, everything should be covered in white. There'll probably be a little bit of, you know, rain and sleet kind of covering your car before you go out there. If your car is outside, you got to chip that off.
Yeah, you might want to get
to school or work in the morning. We'll be looking at ice and snow and salt and snow plows and saying how much I hate Monday morning.
Yeah, it's probably wise to warn people to count on spending a little more time getting the vehicle up and running, because you might be scraping ice off of it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if probably the 11 o'clock update, which usually is when advisories and watches and warnings are issued by the National Weather Service, looking at the way the storm system has now become more of a snow event rather than maybe an ice event, I wouldn't be surprised if we're under at least a winter storm or at least a winter weather advisory, if not a winter storm watch. And then obviously as we go through the afternoon and the early evening hours, that may be updated to maybe even a winter storm warning. Now, this is one thing I like to teach my students. Just because we're not getting more than 6 inches of snow, if the Weather Service thinks that we will have significant accumulations of ice or sleet, which is usually about a quarter of an inch, and then wet snow, which will then freeze on contact, will make the ground or the roadways very, very slick for Monday morning, even if we don't get more than 6 inches, we could be easily under, at least the northern counties, be under a winter storm warning for late tonight and into Monday morning. So that's usually something that people don't understand. They hear winter storm warning, they say, oh, my God, we're going to get a huge snowstorm. But that's not the case. Sometimes a half inch or at least a quarter inch of sleet and ice, and then on top of that snow, could be just as challenging, if not worse, than maybe 6 inches of powdery snow. So tomorrow morning could be a very difficult one. After that, the weather looks pretty good for the rest of the week.
Great. And as Carol said from Fernwood, it's going to go up maybe into the 40s later on this week?
Yeah, I think probably this time of the year, normal high is right now 39. Tomorrow afternoon, even though we have some sunshine, high temperature, maybe about 30, mid to upper 30s during the day on Tuesday. But people don't realize it, but yesterday afternoon, even though we were in the low 30s, in the city of Chicago with some of that rain, sleet, and a little bit of wet snow in the morning, we made it up almost to 39 degrees in Kankakee, while parts of the northern suburbs, northern sections of Lake McHenry County, were only in the low 20s, and the high temperature in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday was only 16, while readings generally right over the state line were in the upper teens. So we had this large pool of extremely cold Arctic air across the northern plains in Canada, which kind of seeped its way down into northern Illinois last night. It's one of the reasons why we went over to a little bit of sleet and freezing rain and freezing drizzle. So there's actually a fair amount of cold air just to the north of us, and I think that's actually going to slide back south of us during the day Wednesday and Thursday. So Wednesday and Thursday, probably temperatures back into the mid-20s, and then it looks like we may warm up again into the upper 30s and 40s by the end of the week. So this time of the year, where your Arctic air is constantly fighting that spring-like, you know, air that's just to the south of you.
Mm-hmm.
Again, from a forecasting standpoint, very difficult to nail it down more than 3 days in advance. Usually, when you have patterns like this, the best thing for a forecaster to do is try not to hit a home run. Just hit a single or double up the gap, and your batting average will remain much higher than if you try to go for the long ball all the time.
That's our guy, Rick DiMaio. He's not a slugger, but his batting average is very high. You know, it's because he's dinging those little singles and doubles, and we appreciate it.
Hey, one last thing. Speaking of baseball, you know, the Cubs open up their spring training season today down in Mesa.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you. There seems to be something wrong here. Cubs, what? What are you talking about? Oh.
Baseball in Arizona, and I know the White Sox will open up again in a couple of days as well, but temperatures down there probably only in the mid to upper 40s to near 50.
Wow.
As the storm system that's going to reach us later on tonight barreled through southern sections of Arizona. In fact, the Tucson area had snow about all the way down to the elevation, Tucson, obviously a little bit higher than Phoenix, but they had nearly 6 inches of snow in the White Mountains east and northeast of Tucson.
Well, my guest, my first guest this morning, Chris Woods, who's out in California near L.A., said it was 35 where he was, and they were, you know, the orange crop was being protected, or they were working at trying to protect it. It got pretty nippy there this morning.
Yeah, pretty nippy, and definitely in parts of the Southwest, and that'll be over us tonight, Mike.
Okay. Rick DeMaio, you can always get his forecast at DeMaioWeather.com, link to it at MikeNovak.net. Always a pleasure, buddy, and we will talk next week.
Okay, stay dry and stay safe tomorrow, Mike.
I will. You too. For 50 years, Sid's Greenhouses has been on the cutting edge of the gardening scene, offering Chicagoland gardens and gardeners the newest of the new and the best of the best in lawn and garden products and programs. And for the last 20 years, they've hosted a lawn and garden expo at their store in Palos Hills to show off the best of the best. It'll all happen again this Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th. You'll be able to meet with an elite group of vendors and special guests and see for yourself all that's new and neat for 2011, with a special emphasis on earth-friendly products with reduced environmental impact. Dozens of exhibitors will be on hand, and there will be free seminars, product demos, and door prizes. Perhaps best of all, parking and admission is free. Visit Sid's website, sidsonline.com. That's sidsonline.com for all of the details, or see the special show guide and select editions of Wednesday's Chicago Tribune. That's Sid's Garden Expo, Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th, at their store in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687, for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's been a Ron Cowgill sighting in the building. Get in here, buddy.
Get in here, Mr. Man.
Mr. Man. How are you, Mr. Man?
Good. How you doing?
Great. Ron Cowgill from Mighty House. Saturdays at 7 a.m. right here on Chicago's Progressive. What are you doing here?
I made a mistake cutting the CD for the show yesterday.
Oh, your podcast?
Yeah, so I had to come down and redo it.
That's so
sad. Because
Mike
wasn't here yesterday, and I tried to do it myself. I didn't do a very good job.
See, when Mike Sanders is not here,
things start to fall apart.
They do. It happens on my show all the time when Sanders is not around. So how's life been on Saturdays?
It's okay.
Yeah? It's early.
It's early, yes.
But it, you know, gets you up and going. At 9 a.m., you're ready for the day, right?
Right. And then, you know, we're done early enough that I still have some things. I can still run around and do some things.
So. And because I know how much you like to work on the weekends.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. You just, you never stop.
No.
And, of course, Ron is a chief cook and bottle washer for DR Services. I highly recommend, I know he's going to blush, but I highly recommend them because they've done some work for me. Ron stands by it, and it's always top flight work that DR Services does.
And that water heater, how's that working for you?
It's great. Oh, yeah. Ron installed my tankless water heater. It is so awesome. I love my tankless. Now, I don't know if I'm saving any money at this point, but it'll take
that
a while.
And you have a little more room in your basement.
And I've got some room there, but it's we still have the big tank. It just serves as a
headroom where you can, because we took all those pipes out.
Oh, yeah, and redid all the pipes. It was awesome, just awesome. Well, it's great to see you, buddy.
Good
luck putting that together.
Yeah.
And if you want to catch a podcast of Mighty House, you go to mightyhouse.net.
Correct. It's there. Or listen to us next weekend.
Or listen live, 7 a.m., Saturday mornings, Chicago's
Mike.
Progressive Talk. A couple of things before we get to CNN News at the top of the hour. I got the address for that seed swap. And they said they're expecting 60-plus participants. Should be hundreds of seeds for swapping. And let me scroll down here. It's at 7501 Harrison Street, It's the Park District building, second floor from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. $2 admission for the Forest Park seed swap. What a deal. Okay, so stop by 7501 Harrison Street, Park District building, second floor. And something else happened really cool, Heather.
Yes.
Tell us about
it. We got a call from the New York-based magazine Garden Design here at the station during the week regarding this lovely little program.
It's a very, for people who know, Garden Design is a fancy schmancy magazine.
It's a posh garden magazine.
It's got lots of pictures.
Yeah. Well, we are going to, they're doing an expose on gardening radio.
Expose?
And, well,
what, did they find my the skeletons in my closet? Is that
I don't think they're digging that hard, but you okay. never know. Time will tell.
I mean, I've already copped to polyester leisure suits and platform
heels.
Shoes. So,
yeah, right. I think so. Yeah, so it might be just a little blurb for all I know. But they're doing a thing on gardening radio. We made their list, and they called. We are going to be in their April issue in their fresh section.
That is so. And what I liked about it is that. The person who called was not the writer.
No.
It was the fact checker.
Yes, the fact checker spoke to
We'd
me.
Like to know if Mr. Novak really does have a radio show.
Yes.
Does he...
And they were listening to the
does
podcast.
He really know, does he know anything about gardening? I got to tell you something. I write for Chicagoland Gardening Magazine, and I have for the last 8 years. And I tried to get a column in another gardening magazine. It wasn't Garden Design. But it was another one of the fancy schmancy magazines. You know what they wrote back to me? It was really snarky. It said, well, we can't tell from your writing whether you have any enthusiasm or any knowledge about gardening.
Nice.
Thanks.
Well, this one, their website,
hey,
too.
Have a nice day.
Their website's www.gardendesign.com.
Okay. So that comes out in April.
April's issue.
Believe me, I'm going to plaster it all over MikeNovak.net when that happens, okay? All right, second hour. I'm so excited. Talk to Jerry Adelman from Open Lands. Amy Collins will be here. We're going to talk about the Open Lands Lakeshore Preserve. Look for the video. It's up on my homepage, MikeNovak.net. We'll be back.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
Welcome back to the second big hour of the Mike Novak Show. I've been getting emails from folks ever since I started talking about Fernwood Botanical Gardens this morning. Monica Miller wrote to me. She said, Fernwood is a wonderful place with a cool prairie and very nice folks in charge. One of the favorite places I've been invited to speak. So it's nice to hear that. I got there was another one. Was it Zan? Yes, Zan Nelson wrote, we stumbled on Fernwood when we had gotten lost in southern Michigan years ago. And that can happen in southern Michigan. You get lost and people never see you again. And she says, what a wonderful place. Also, now you're co-piloting now, Ms. Fry. She'll just drag mic over.
Mark and I are... Pinch-hitting for each other.
I just look to the side of me, and I never know who's there answering the phones and doing all this stuff.
You just flood yourself with so much talent.
There is. And there's a remark. That's a great segue. A remarkable amount of talent is in the room right now. And I have to tell you that I, for one, am very excited about it. As I mentioned at the top of the show, I took a little video of a hike that I made up at what used to be called Fort Sheridan. Part of it is still called Fort Sheridan. It's pretty complicated, actually, when you think about it. But the good thing is that part of this rare ecosystem along Lake Michigan is being saved, is being restored, and it's going to be a chance. It's almost like a science experiment. And the people you can thank for that is Openlands and the folks associated with Openlands. In the studio right now, I have Amy Collins, Openlands Lakeshore Preserve site manager. She was with me on the hike. You'll see her in that little YouTube video that I've got up there. And I'm also very, very pleased and excited to have Jerry Adelman, who is the Openlands president and CEO, here in the studio. And I don't know why I haven't done this before, Jerry.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here. You have a great show.
Well, thank
you. Incredible voice for conservation and the environment, you know, throughout our region.
I'm going to ask you to pull that mic down just a tad.
Sure. How's
there
that?
We, that's
that
much better. Yeah. Well, you know, okay, I wasn't necessarily going to start this way, but I will, because I suspect. And by the way, if anybody has wants to talk about this and they live up in that area and have seen some of the restoration work going on, 773-838-9278. Call and talk to Jerry Adelman, who is president and CEO of Openlands. For people in the biz, that's me and you and environmentalists and conservationists, Openlands is a big deal, and you're a big deal, okay? And I know you're going to blush, all right? But I'm excited to have you on, and I should have done this years ago. But for people outside of the biz, maybe not so much. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, I get the feeling that you really don't care. You just go about doing your business, and Openlands gets things done. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of the organization. And it's protecting our environment and doing so many different things, like tree keepers, for example. I'm a tree keeper, number 417.
Hey.
All right.
Reporting for duty, sir.
20 years old this year, the program.
I know. And it's an amazing program that teaches people how to take care of the urban forest. And you have done so many different things, and we'll talk about some of them. But what do you think about that?
No, I think you're really accurate, Mike. I mean, we are a regional land conservation group. We've been around almost 50 years. We're a pioneer nationally. Back in 1963, when we were formed, you know, conservation was seen as, you know, focus for rural landscapes, wilderness, not big cities, suburbs, exurban fringe. And so we've always been connecting people to the land and thinking about that web of green that ties our extraordinary three-state region together, from mm-hmm. inner city, you know, community gardens to the urban forest to trails and greenways, or large landscape scale preserves like the Madewin Tallgrass Prairie.
Which is awesome.
It is.
And I talk to people about that. It is one of those places that just puts chills up your spine for several reasons. Because you go out to Madewin, you see the immediate past, which is the military. And again, here's the common thread between that
right.
and Fort Sheridan. Sheridan is the military connection.
Yeah.
And you go and you see what's left of the military facilities there. And that gives you goosebumps because you think of our military might. But then you also see the future, which is the past, which is prairie.
Bringing prairie back to the prairie state. I mean, less
yeah.
than, you know, 0.1% of the original prairie survives in Illinois, the prairie state. And here at that scale, I mean, 19,000 acres, not
it's
all of
huge.
Which is prairie, it's huge.
Yeah.
So it's an exciting opportunity. So we've done a lot as a catalyst, as a leader, as a land purchaser, as a coalition builder, advocate. But with one exception, we don't own and manage it. Our name isn't on it. So when you go on the Illinois Prairie Path, the first example of a rail-to-trail conversion in the country, or you visit Madewin, you know, the first National Tallgrass Prairie, or hike down the I&M Canal, the National Heritage Corridor, the first of these heritage areas, there are now 50 around the country, on and on, you are at sites that open land shaped one way or another, either directly or with many partners. But our name's not on it. And that's fine, quite frankly, you know, because the important thing is that on the ground, we have this extraordinary network of important open spaces, natural areas, recreational resources that people benefit
but
from.
But how does that come about that you do all this work and you don't necessarily want to have the plaque with yeah. the Openlands name
well,
on it?
Well, I think we'd like to maybe get our name out there a little more. Obviously, it's kind of important, you know, in this environment especially. Yeah. But I guess the real test is, you know, have we been successful in protecting these extraordinary resources? You know, one of our founders, George Overton, who was an amazing guy, who cared very much about social justice issues as he did the environment. And so for him, access to nature for all people who live in this region was really important. But he said many times, he said, Jerry, you know, you have to save a site at least two or three times. You know, there are threats, there are issues. And so if you don't have that constituency, that's what really matters, is on the ground, people who are connected, volunteers, tree keepers, volunteer stewards who are out there, you know, restoring our prairies and forested areas, people who go to the public hearing, then you're not going to succeed. And I think that we and our partners in the conservation community have been successful in generating a great deal of grassroots support. So that's really the most important thing. And would we like our name better known? Oh, sure. Of course we would. But, and you're helping.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're on the show. I do want to spread the word about Open Lands. One great partner of yours is Scott Jameson.
Definitely.
And he just tweeted... He said, open land. Yeah, you got to love the modern technology, don't you?
Really, this I
is,
tell you.
It's just awesome. He says, open lands is the voice and action for conservation and urban trees. So wow. He's a tree guy, you know.
Is he a tree guy? Not only is he a board member, actually, of Open Lands, but he has been on the faculty, as you know, of our Tree Keeper program mm-hmm. from its inception. And so the kind of volunteer commitment that he makes is extraordinary. And this program, Tree Keepers, you know that you know well. You're what number? Four?
417.
417. We now have almost 1,300 people who have gone through this. Seven classes, 3 hours each, mm-hmm. you know, learning all about trees from, you know, physiology to tree planting to pruning, mulching, diseases, where to go for help. Every weekend we have work days. But the most important thing is that people are connected to the urban forest. They recognize the values of trees in our urban setting, the multiple benefits that they provide. And now with a new mayor coming in, you know, it's going to be an interesting transition.
Well,
and
yeah.
We hope that yeah. we've got a constituency now. We have people from all walks of life, from every neighborhood in the city, who are tree keepers. In fact, we just got a call about 3 months ago from Canberra, Australia. They were researching volunteer, you know, urban forestry stewardship programs where citizens really get involved in caring for the urban forest, which is collectively all the trees that we have in our parkways and mm-hmm. parks and, you know, public spaces. And they said, you know, Tree Keepers is the best program and we want to model ours after yours. So we had a long conversation, sent them material and so forth. But it really has become a national and to some extent international model. But the true test is now. Will that voice be heard? Are we going to be able to maintain the extraordinary momentum that we've experienced under the Daley administration?
Well, you and I sat across the table from each other in several meetings at the end of last year when we put together the Green Growth Platform
yep.
among various conservation and environmental groups in the city. I have to admit, what we were doing, I thought was really important. The way it turned out, not so much in my own mind, because I wanted to talk about the effect it had. I'm not sure it had any effect, which is a little disappointing. I'm glad we did what we did because, for one thing, it quantified the kinds of issues that we need to see results in and from. All right, so we had environmentalists from the area sit down, and at least we put it all on paper. Did it affect the candidates? Well, they all pretty much said, yeah, we'll do this, we'll do this, we'll do this. And some expounded on it and others didn't. And at the end of the day, I don't think it had a lot of effect on the race.
Well, it may not have had a major effect on the race, but I'm more optimistic about the future. I mean, the real work
well,
is...
Well, wait, you got to understand, you're an optimist, and I'm the opposite direction.
Okay, well, this is healthy. You know, you got that yin-yang kind of thing
yeah.
going. But, I mean, the real test is what kind of agenda will Mayor-elect Emanuel develop?
Mm-hmm.
And he's just, you know, announced the leaders of his transition team. Committees are going to be established in the next week or two. That blueprint is there. I was fortunate to be with a number of conservation leaders who met with Rahm Emanuel a couple weeks ago.
See, I was going to ask, when did you meet with them? Because I figured you had to have already met with Rahm Emanuel.
Well, with you know, about 10 or 12 others, you know. But we had a very productive discussion. And I was very pleased to hear, you know, what his vision is. And again, just shorthand. But he referenced the Burnham Plan, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And the amazing signature resource brand that our lakefront offers.
Mm-hmm.
He focused on the river. So he said water is going to be really important.
Yes,
he referenced Northerly Island. The Bloomingdale Trail is a high priority. He said he already spoke
yes,
to Secretary LaHood about, you know, trying to get some resources to make that happen. I mean, he's had a lot of good things. And so I
think it shows that he's aware of these
exactly,
issues.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, and are these his highest priorities? Well, probably not, given the economy and mm-hmm. challenges with education and crime and whatever. But clearly it's on the radar screen. And I was impressed with his observations.
Well, that's what I want to hear, I'm hoping. You know, and as president of the Chicago Recycling Coalition, I hope that I get to talk to him, too, about where he's going with that. Although, you know, from what I know, there are going to be things done before the end of the Daley administration. They put bids out there, and they've accepted bids. And even before Rahm takes office, I have a feeling that things will be set in motion. Some things will be set in motion regarding recycling, though it's not going to be finished.
But good things. So at least there's positive
Yeah, there is positive
direction.
Movement yeah. on it. You know, and how thorough it will be is anybody's guess at this point.
Sure, sure.
That's Jerry Adelman, who is the CEO and president of Openlands. And again, you're welcome to call and comment if you want, 773-838-9278. Also in the room, Amy. I want to get you involved because this is where we make that that turn towards the Openlands Lakeshore Preserve. And Amy, thank you so much for accompanying me on the tour of it this past Thursday.
It's, no problem. It was a pleasure.
It's an awesome space, and you must be very proud to be the site manager.
I certainly am. I loved the site the first time I saw it, and that grows deeper every day I'm out there.
So give me a little bit about your background.
I have a background in environmental studies and came to Openlands last April as the site manager. So you'll see me out on site communicating with our visitors, handling maintenance issues, education programs, and things like that.
And I alluded to this earlier that it's actually a pretty complex situation, but this seems to be the sort of thing that Openlands thrives on, where you have different municipalities and you have government agencies and you have forest preserves and park preserve park districts, and you bring everybody to the table and you say, okay, this is how this is going to happen. And this is a situation where the base, Fort Sheridan, was decommissioned back in the early 90s, and suddenly there was this land that could have just as easily been snapped up by developers. It could be wall-to-wall condos up there right now. And the fact that it isn't is a testimony to what you've done with wow. Openlands. I'm kind of curious, whose radar screen, I mean, whose alarm bell started going off at that point to say, we have to save this?
Well, Mike, let me just put it in perspective very quickly here. But when we went back to the early minutes of Openlands, you know, the organization when it was first formed, fledgling group, civic leaders, conservationists coming together, they had several things that they singled out. They said, we've got to watch. One was the Joliet Arsenal. They said it's the largest piece of undeveloped property in the metropolitan region. And Fort Sheridan. They said, someday that fort may be closed. 2 miles of lakefront. Keep our eye on it.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, we did. And as you referenced, in the early 90s, they announced the closing of the northern part. The southern was transferred largely to the Navy. There's still some Army holdings as well.
Right, and they built affordable housing for Navy.
For the Navy, redevelopment. The Navy, yeah. That's the later development here. So mm-hmm. the first part in the early 90s, Openlands formed a broad coalition. I think it was 15 or 20 different organizations who were concerned about the environment, open space, also historic preservation, because it was a...
That's another thing. I mean, yeah, you're dealing with historic preservation,
absolutely.
Not just of land, but of buildings.
Right, right.
They're
fabulous
buildings.
The northern part is a national historic landmark. It's the highest category, as well as a national registered district. So there were all sorts of proposals to have that be a gated community and to redevelop the entire property.
My head would have exploded. Top of my head would just come off.
So we were successful collectively. Again, we led the charge and staffed it, but it was a broad coalition of many different interests, and that's often how we operate. Successful in getting 270-some acres transferred to the Lake County Forest Preserve District. So that was a huge coup. You know, so little of our lakefront outside. We have about 2 or 3 miles of lakefront in Illinois, about half of which is in the city, and all but 4 miles is, you know, open and accessible. Once you leave Chicago and go north, there are small parks, but they tend to be local. You mm-hmm. need a sticker to park in the parking lot. I mean, it's not really a regional resource. Now you get all the way up north and you've got Illinois Beach, and that's fabulous, but it's dune swale topography and ecology, much like Indiana Dunes. So this bluff ravine, very special, you know, sort of landscape, most of it's private. So 2 miles, you know, Fort Sheridan, so we can't lose it. So about what, maybe 4 years ago, Senator Kirk, then Congressman Kirk, turned to us, his district, and he said, you know, we're going to redevelop the southern part now for market rate housing and Navy housing.
Mm-hmm.
And will you work with us to find a public agency to take over the mile of little over a mile of lakefront, three ravines, and the bluffs? We said, sure, no problem. And we turned to a variety of players. Everyone was supportive, said, we've got to save this. It's unique, you know, extraordinary resource. But for various reasons, no one was willing, able to take it. So we went back to then, you know, Congressman Kirk and said, we can't find anyone. And he said, well, unless.
Was it a financial problem?
Well, I think. Yes. I mean, because even though the land would be given to the, you know, transferred at no cost, huge costs in terms of restoration, the infrastructure, the programs, ongoing commitment to maintain and manage. I mean, we have, you know, a $12 million capital campaign underway right now. We're at $10 million. So we're getting close, but have ways to go.
Send
so
those I think checks that was to open lands.
That's a lot of money, though. Yeah. And we said, well, you know, we've never owned land. We've saved thousands of acres. We've spent millions of dollars. We have revolving loan funds. We do hold conservation easements in perpetuity on private property, but we don't own and manage property. We've never done it in our history. And he said, well, if you don't do it, then it's a gated community. So we went back to our board, and they said, we got to do it. It's been an extraordinary experience. We're so lucky to have Amy. She's just done a wonderful job, and the passion and enthusiasm and talent that she brings. And you, of course, were there with Bob, our chief operating officer who directs our land.
Bob McKeer, who just has the world's most unspellable last name.
I know. But what a great guy. We were so fortunate to
he's
have
wonderful.
Him with our organization.
You'll see him in that YouTube video. That he's the guy doing all the talking.
You did
a
nice job with that. Yeah. So anyway, that's how that came about, and we just said we have to do it. And so we're doing it. And it's been an amazing experience. And as you know, we see it as a learning experience, a learning landscape. I mean, learning on many levels, how to do restoration of these rare ecosystems that we know little about, the ravines. It's kind of the last frontier of restoration ecology.
And I think people, and again, this is one of those things that most people are unaware of. They say, well, it's a lakeshore, it's a lakeshore. What a, you know, but this is a place where a glacier dumped off, you know, created bluffs and dumped a lot of material. And there are ravines and where there aren't in many places along the lake. And this is an ecosystem that is among the rarest in the world.
Exactly.
Yes.
And Amy, how many threatened and endangered plants have we identified to date?
To date, we've identified 6 state endangered or threatened plant species. 4 of those are found on the beach, and 2 of them are found on the lakeshore bluff. So it's a very specific ecosystem that they inhabit, and to be able to preserve the 2-mile stretch is very significant in Illinois.
And of course, you know, as habitat, I mean, here we are on this migratory route, and we've identified over 100 species of birds to date, and mm-hmm. still counting.
Yes.
We have many partners helping us, too, like Audubon, for instance, doing counts and so forth. From a natural resource point of view, it's amazing. But from an educational point of view, what an opportunity. And so, you know, we're working with 20-some schools, developing model curriculum. And then in terms of site interpretation, you saw some of the early artwork, the mural and the poles.
There's
and more
a
will be
fabulous
going in.
Mural on an overpass there, and I have photos of it on my website, mikenovak.net, and you can see the overpass. And then I did a close-up on the trillium and the ants.
Isn't that spectacular?
It's great.
Kind of this microcosm, yeah. You know, macrocosm, whatever, dealing with all these scales. And it's really a powerful piece.
By the way, that is the CEO and president of Openlands, Jerry Adelman. He's in studio with me. And Amy Collins, who's the Lakeshore Preserve site manager. We're talking about preserving that land. And the number, if folks want to call in, they'll call 773-838-9278. If they don't, I get to have a conversation all by myself here. This is fine. This is absolutely fine with me. So, you're at the point now up there. Well, it's still developing because right. One of the things that Amy showed me is a ravine where you're going to put a bridge across. And I looked at it and I said, this is going to happen by the end of this year?
We have our fingers crossed.
So everything has to go right for that.
Yes.
Because you're creating
but it
trails.
Will.
It will.
Yeah.
Well, what's interesting about you have these 3 ravines that you are going to be protecting. One of them has a road down the middle of it. And as Bob McKeer explained to me, that's not such a bad thing because it makes it accessible.
Right.
Yes.
And accessibility, as Bob told you, you know, is one of our real anchor, you know, kind of goals here, accessibility at all levels for all people.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for instance, the Upland Trail will be fully accessible to people with disabilities. You know, we've been working with the Rehabilitation Institute, getting insights into what does that really mean, not just the ADA, you know, minimum requirements, but
right.
where do you have benches and what about signage and so forth. And that road, I mean, we wouldn't put a road down a ravine, but it's been there for over 100 years, probably part of the original plan, we think.
And Bob tells me that to some degree it stabilizes the land.
It saved that ravine mm-hmm. in terms of the plant communities, which isn't that right, Amy?
That's correct. It's in much better – Bartlett Ravine is the ravine with the road down it, and it's in much better shape than a lot of the other ravines, both on the site and in private ownership, because of that road holding the soil down.
Well, and part of the problem is what we do with the water and the
exactly.
way the water's been directed and – you know, nature has one way of doing it, but then when we start putting in sewers and say, let's just throw it down the ravine, then it starts washing away things.
Yes.
And we probably have a better handle than any of the other ravine sites on that water issue because we've done extensive studies, you know, on drainage within that kind of ravine watershed to try to understand where's all this water coming from, where is it going, how do you manage it, how do you keep it on site?
Well, that brings you to the other jurisdictions there. You've got the town of Fort Sheridan, you've got the Forest District, Forest Preserve,
yep.
you've got the Army, you've got the Navy, and they're all draining and they're doing things. I mean, the Navy's setting up all this housing, and as you mentioned, there's private housing as well. You all have to cooperate.
We do.
And
again,
how do you do that? How does it get done?
You know, it's just like this, getting people around a table and talking things through and sharing information and building a level of trust and understanding. It's kind of how we operate as an organization because there's so many units of local government in northeastern Illinois. And then when you expand to the broader Chicago wilderness region that takes in, you know, parts of Indiana, Wisconsin, even all the way up to Berrien County, Michigan, lots of players. But our natural resources, I mean, a river stream doesn't respect political boundaries, you know. A watershed sure doesn't. And
just,
so we're trying
to ask the Colorado River when it gets, when it gets to Mexico and
exactly.
it's a trickle, you know.
Yeah. So it's just kind of how we do our work. When we did our greenways and trail plan with then NPSI, CMAP now, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, or the Water Trails Plan or whatever, you've got to have everybody voluntarily buy in. And so this is a microcosm of the bigger region. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it gets a little rocky, just like a family. You know, sometimes you get a little dysfunctional. But in the big picture, I think people value what we're trying to do. They see the benefit to people who live near it, adjacent to it, and to the broader metropolitan area.
Well, this has to increase property values, I would think, if you're living near this wonderful, yeah. unique ecosystem.
Right. Which I think is one of the dimensions, and I know, Mike, we've spoken about this in the past, but in kind of making the case for green infrastructure, for a really wonderful green program like Mayor Daley has developed for the city, is it has economic benefit mm-hmm. and direct impact in terms of quality of life, in terms of the image and brand, in terms of opportunities to access nature and recreation close to where you live. One metropolitan area competing with another around the globe, you know, people are looking at all these different dimensions of urban life. And if you have wonderful parks and trails and natural areas and opportunities to escape to those close to home, it makes a difference. So certainly that's true with a specific site like the preserve as well.
Well, Jerry's, you know, wonking on policy here. But since I have you in the room, Amy, I want to know, I want to geek out on the ecology a little bit,
just
for a couple of minutes here. And what is it that you're looking forward to seeing this year? You've done a lot of restoration. Bob and you showed me where you'd opened up the land. A lot of invasive species were there. You took down a lot of trees because they were shading the ground. And we all know what happens is that you take away that canopy and the natural forbs come back, the seeds sprout and you get stuff. What do you think you're going to see this year that you haven't seen so far?
Well, you know, it's always a surprise every season. What I expect to see is more of what we've seen blooming in the spring. Our trillium was going bonkers last year. I think it's going to be even better this year.
You know, and there are people who try to grow trillium unsuccessfully who are just going to, well, you know, the idea is just have a natural area, I suppose.
Yeah. I think that we'll just continue to see more abundance. And as we keep doing research, such as the project we did monitoring species with the Chicago Botanic Garden last year, mm-hmm. we'll continue to come across, hopefully, new species that we haven't realized were there before. One example is we have a northern boreal blackberry that grows in there.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to be able to find it. I haven't been able to find it yet.
Well, wait, how do you know it's there or it's supposed to be?
It was in another survey that was done by an independent researcher a few years ago. It's mentioned in the report, but I have not been able to track down its location.
Well, how many acres are you dealing with and trying to track it down?
It's about 77 acres, so I have my work cut out for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you do. and not only that, it's 77 acres, and much of it is a 45-degree angle.
Exactly.
Yes, it's very steep
and down.
Out there,
yeah.
Which is one of the things I think that is a draw about the preserve. It's such an unusual topographical landscape in Illinois. It's 70 feet up above the lake when you're standing on the edge of the bluff. It's pretty extraordinary.
Well, I would sit here all day talking about this and not be embarrassed at all, just go into the minutia, and yet Open Lands does so many other things. And I also have a time frame here that I have to get to. I think it's funny that the Jerry walks in the door, Jerry Edelman from Open Lands, and first thing he does is he hands me the Open Lands annual report.
Hot off the press two days ago.
Oh, and look, and right here, look at this.
Yeah,
there's the mural.
Those are the artists, by the way, in the corner there.
They're great. And you've got, and that's one of the things I wanted to compliment you on. You have art in the ravine, and there will be more art. And it's always fun to see that integrated with that kind of space.
And what we're trying to do is kind of pioneer a new nexus between art and conservation or ecology. So it's not a sculpture park, just putting beautiful art there because it's a beautiful setting.
Mm-hmm.
Nor is it purely didactic, where it just... But it's that kind of middle ground where artists are given a lot of freedom, but where the art gives you a point of entry. A way for the general public to connect to this very special place, like those color poles, for instance. Mm-hmm. Why are there so many colors of blue or the various greens? And hopefully that causes people to look more critically and at detail. And so it's exciting, this art dimension of it, definitely.
I want to get to something else you mentioned, and we got a call, I think, that's coming in. You'll need your headsets to hear that. But you also mentioned that Chicago or at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show, you're going to have a presence.
Right. We have a demonstration garden. The show opens on March 5th. It runs through the 13th. And Culleton Quinn Landscape Architects have been the lead on this, volunteering their talent and expertise and working with all kinds of wonderful contractors and partners, but doing a garden that really focuses on water and how do we keep water, the idea of a rain garden, water barrels. I mean, how do you keep water where it falls? And it's very exciting and I think a wonderful example of green infrastructure at work. And I think it should be quite spectacular.
That is rapidly becoming one of the main focuses of environmental progress, is how we treat water. Looking at the ravine and how what the Army did came in, their idea was, let's get it off the property as fast as possible. And this is not to denigrate the Army, it's just the way it's been done, and you pave over the streams and let's not let it get into the ground. But now we're completely 180-ing that whole thing. And the idea with gardeners is take it off the roof, put it into the ground.
Exactly.
Put it back into the aquifer.
It's a precious resource, mm-hmm. and we've treated it basically as a nuisance, as waste.
What I tell you. We've turned it into poison.
Yep.
Yeah, and collected pharmaceuticals and oils and chemicals and fertilizer and all that. And then what do? We treat it and we try to clean it up. Well, it'd be better, don't you think, if we didn't do that in the first place?
And Mike, as I think you know, one of the dimensions of Open Lands work is wetlands restoration. And we're doing some massive restoration projects in partnership with Cook County Forest Preserve and Will County Forest Preserve districts. But again, let the natural systems process this. Let's not spend millions of dollars, to treat water that we then send down the Mississippi. It's crazy.
And then create dead zones in the Gulf of Mexico. Let's go to line one. Alan from Lake Bluff, you're on the Mike Novak Show. How you doing?
Fine. I have a question. I've lived in the area, and I'm glad that all I heard was the real estate promotions several years back of it being split up and how wonderful it was going to be, and then that just died and didn't hear anything else in the news, and I'm glad that it's gone back to nature. The question I have, in and around Lake County, there's various little spots of land, and they have parking lots that you can go, and then they have pathways that you can go out and look. All I see when I drive by Fort Sheridan now is this, the gate to the non-gated community access, and I'm wondering, how do you get to this, or is that not in place yet, public access?
Well, if you go to our website, there is information that directs you to Bartlett Ravine. So we had a kind of a very light opening, if you want, last fall.
Because you're still putting this
together. We're putting the infrastructure in. So there'll be a trail system with wonderful overlooks and so forth up on the bluff where construction will begin soon. I mean, it's been laid out forth.
It's a staged opening, and it's still in process.
Right.
That's correct.
But we're anticipating our grand opening September 10th. And so if Amy keeps everyone on task here, we'll be successful in getting all these things done.
And I'll tell you, Alan, when I went there, Amy gave me specific directions. I wouldn't have found the parking lot to Bartlett Ravine if I hadn't known exactly where I was going.
No, it was a real soft opening. It's very, but at least people can use it.
Yes.
And again, by September, though, we'll have all the infrastructure in place and good maps and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's...
The other thing, and this applies both to you and Mr. Novak, is that it's Sunday, but I'm not religious at all. But the spiritual aspect of all this is just heartening. It's just fabulous that people are paying attention. Maybe it's pantheistic, paying attention to the spirits and the beauty of everything else that is not something we made.
You know, that's an excellent point there, Alan. Anybody who listens to my show knows that I'm not a particular fan of organized religion, but that is my religion, that spirituality that you experience in a place like Bartlett Ravine and along the lakefront there.
And I think what you're finding, too, is that even organized religion is recognizing that we are the stewards of this resource, that we are part of nature, and that we have responsibility to take care of it. So... You know, again, if it's a more transcendental, pantheistic sort of approach, or if it's even formal religion, I think throughout the globe we're recognizing that we as humans have the responsibility to care for that.
Alan, great question, great comment. I appreciate you calling the show.
Okay, one last thing, and that is also the aspect, the health aspect. Every time I go out and am in nature, I feel so much better than any amount of drugs or vitamins. Thank you very much for your show, and thank you for putting all these diverse resources that I go on. Most people just don't know about, and even I don't have access to, but thank you very much.
You're quite welcome, Alan. Thank you so much. That's why I do it. I know that as I pointed out, and it brings us full circle to the very first question I asked you. It's like people don't often know who's behind getting these things done. Well, you should know. Openlands.org. Openlands.org. And if you want to find out about Bartlett Ravine, you go to either my website. I got links there. Or you can go to openlands.org. Type in Bartlett Ravine on their search function on the site, and it'll take you to all kinds of pages. There's the history of it. I love it. You've got the ecology. You can find so much information. And we just kind of scratched the surface of open lands here, didn't we, Jerry?
We did, but I think we're fortunate to have you, to kind of broadcast this message. And you have been such a great ambassador for conservation and the environment in general. And thank you for including open lands.
Well, I do appreciate having you here schlepping down to the south side. And I'm coming back out to Bartlett in the spring. because
excellent.
Because
I see those Trillium and all the ephemerals.
Oh, yeah. And I want to see the red Trillium that Amy tells me grow only in association with a certain tree.
Yes, they grow around the three, I believe, bur oak trees that we found on the site. And there's the one little patch of red Trillium at the base, nowhere else on the site. They have some sort of partnership that we don't quite understand.
And you will figure it out at some point.
At some point.
And then at the end of the season, I'm going to come to see the bridge.
Great. Better have it done.
Because I'm going to walk across it, whether it's ready or not. So it better be ready. Jerry Adelman, Amy Collins, thank you so much. And my thanks to Bob McKeer, who took me on the tour last week. And we'll keep people apprised of this and the progress that you're making during the year.
Well, we look forward to future conversations. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Thank you.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. Only 3 weeks until spring. However, most of our trees will remain dormant for a while. That's good news. It means that you still have time to get some of that winter pruning done before they wake up. Because your tree is less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects in the winter, pruning just before spring can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Are you looking at some branches that worry you? Maybe they got beat up over the winter, or maybe you're thinking about this. You've been thinking about it for a couple of years, watching that branch and saying, I need to get that done. Well, give the Care of Trees a call right now and finally get the work done. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Okay, have you ever noticed that March seems to come around about this time every year? It's positively cyclical. My inner clock is also telling me that it must be time to tell folks about the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. You definitely want to pick this up because you get two publications for the price of one. That's two for the price of one. Not only do you get the Midwest's best guide to Zone 5 gardening, now that's the magazine, but you also receive the annual resource guide, a separate booklet that has information about garden centers, seeds, classes, tools and equipment, supplies, structures and hardscapes, books and publications, arboretums, or is that arboreta? Greenhouses and florists, aquatic and pond supplies, landscape design and installation services, and more. How do you do it? How do they do it? And, of course, there's my column on the inside back page of the magazine, not the resource guide. Oh, look hard enough and you'll find it. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com. This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I'm sorry. It was just such an honor to have Jerry Adelman here and Amy and to talk about this. As you can tell, they're both very passionate about it, and Jerry's been leading the way at Open Lands and doing great, great work for a long, long time. And I don't know why I didn't get him on the show earlier, but I'm glad I finally did. Heather Fry, we've been getting stuff pouring in here about one thing or another. What did you want to tell me about?
Well, My Skinny Garden did tweet us after our mention that we're going to be in Garden Design Magazine.
Yeah.
And her quote is, "Garden Design Mag is like garden porn."
It is. It's got pretty pictures.
I guess so. I want to see this now.
it's just one of those magazines that they really devote. I mean, there's great text, but really, it's about the photos.
Yeah.
And they do it upright, so that's why I'm kind of excited to be in the mag.
We've posted the video of the walk of the Bartlett Ravine on the Facebook and on Twitter, and we've gotten lots of comments on that and likes and such. But one of your friends has Facebooked you where you said, check out our garden calendar.
Yeah.
And he says, check out your own garden calendar. Randy Craig? No, you check out your own calendar. I assume that's an inside joke.
I have no idea. If it's Randy Craig, who's one of the Frozen Robins.
Ah.
So there you
explains
go.
Explains everything.
Oh, I can explain who that is.
Mm-hmm.
Fred Mertz.
Ah.
Okay.
Okay.
Fred.
Then that makes perfect sense now.
And actually, we have another member of the Frozen Robins in studio right here. Let's turn on his mic. You weren't expecting this, but I'm going to give you a little plug, Mr. Marsh.
How you doing, Mike?
All right. You have a brand new radio show coming up right on Chicago's Progressive Talk.
I do. It's going to be premiering April 2nd.
Give us your best 30 seconds on what you're going to be
doing. Oh, my gosh. Wow. Okay. Can I go back and write it? No. All right.
Well, too late.
It's called Awakened America, and basically it's a Zen perspective on politics.
Zen perspective.
See that? I did it in 10 seconds.
That's good. If that's all it is, your promos are going to be easy. So the idea, I am assuming, is for people not to yell at each other, but maybe actually talk to each other?
Yes, yes, yes. To change the dialogue to something a bit more civil, really to talk about facts. I actually have a guy on Facebook, I have a friend, and I'm not making this up. His name is Dick Upright. That's actually his name. And he is a teabagger. I kid you not. It's really his name.
Oh, boy.
I know. It just keeps going. But I've actually been having a running
dialogue. Marsha, the gift that keeps on giving. Go ahead. Tell the story.
All right. So I have been going back and forth with him for the past 4 or 5 months. And what I tried to do, rather than, you know, you get to somebody like that who just gives you the talking points and Glenn Beck stuff and everything, you want to yell at them. But I don't do that. I actually talk with him, and I try and talk facts, and I insist when he says something, you give me facts to back it up. And we actually got to the point where he admitted he was going to have to vote Democratic because he needed health care.
Really?
Yes. So I was like, well, that's real. So I actually got somewhere with him, and I think.
And so you think you can get somewhere with other folks as well?
Maybe.
All right. Well, give me the plug again one more time, starting.
It's Awakened America, starting on April 2nd. It'll be Saturday from 10 to 11.
Right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Thank you, Marsh.
Sure, Mike.
Now, for 50 years, Sid's Greenhouses has been on the cutting edge of the gardening scene, offering Chicagoland gardeners the newest of the new and the best of the best in lawn and garden products and programs. For the last 20 years, they've hosted a lawn and garden expo at their store in Palos Hills to show off the best of the best. It happens again this year, this Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th. You'll be able to meet with an elite group of vendors and special guests and see for yourself all that's new and neat for 2011, with a special emphasis on earth-friendly products with reduced environmental impact. Dozens of exhibitors will be on hand, and there will be free seminars, product demos, and door prizes. Perhaps best of all, parking and admission is free. Visit Sid's website, sidsonline.com, for all the details, or see the special show guide in select editions of Wednesday's Chicago Tribune. That's Sid's Garden Expo, Friday and Saturday, March 4th and 5th, at their store in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
In just 60 seconds, we'll be talking to Rob Gardner from The Local Beat. Are you familiar with Aldo Leopold? He is considered the father of wildlife ecology. WRD Environmental would like you to remember something that Aldo Leopold wrote. He said, "The outstanding scientific discovery of the 20th century is not television or radio, but rather the complexity of the land organism, which we are finding out about up at Bartlett Ravine near Fort Sheridan." Anyway, back to Aldo. Only those who know the most about it can appreciate how little we know about it. The last word in ignorance is the man who says of an animal or plant, what good is it? If the land mechanism as a whole is good, then every part is good, whether we understand it or not. If the biota, in the course of eons, has built something we like but do not understand, then who but a fool would discard seemingly useless parts? To keep every cog and wheel is the first precaution of intelligent tinkering. At WRD Environmental, they not only appreciate the complexity of our region's ecology, but are dedicated to protecting, restoring, and healing it. WRD creates sustainable landscapes, from large-scale master planning to community pocket parks. For innovative, sustainable landscape development, choose WRD Environmental, located at the Chicago Center for Green Technology, and online at WRDEnvironmental.com. Oh yeah, I got it. And obviously what you're all looking for is where you're going to buy fresh produce this year, 2011, as we get into the growing season. The man who's got the answer is on line one. That's Rob Gardner from the local beat. How you doing, Rob?
Okay.
Just merely okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's all the time we have, everybody. great talking to you. I was cruising the internets the other day and came across the local beat, which I check out from time to time. It's got great stories about everything food. It's all about food. And one of the things that was up there was a notice that your 2011 list of community-supported agriculture businesses was up. And I thought, got to give Rob a call. So, and you just posted it in the past week, right?
Yeah, I appreciate you checking out the site, you know, on your regular perusals of the internet and seeing that we got the list up. I mean, the summer is still far away when you look outside, but you need to start getting your CSA in line now. I mean, some of the CSAs, you know, some of the really big ones like Angelic Organics are pretty much sold out.
Really? So, already?
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to get a CSA, now is the time to do it. It's like sending your kids to camp. It's something you have to do in the winter.
And some people, as you say, sell out quickly. But the good news is that you have 75 different CSAs listed on your list, and that might actually increase, won't it?
Right. And what we're really kind of happy with what we've been able to do with our list, and first of all, before I forget, I want to make sure that a lot of credit is due to Wendy Ashelman, whose name is hard to pronounce, but she really has done the bulk of the research, and also Robin Shermer has helped out. So those are the people who really have gone and pounded the pavement and identified these 75 CSAs.
And Robin, of course, has been on the program. So
right.
Congratulations to Robin and Wendy for putting this list together.
And what I want to say is what we've done is you know, it's searchable. So you can, like, let's say, you know, you want to find a CSA that's in your community, or you want to find a CSA that, you know, has eggs. You could, there's a search box right on the listing, and you can put in the, you know, what you're looking for. You can also sort, you know, the directory different ways, so you can see like who farms organically. So not only have we found 75 farms, but we've put the data out there in ways that, you know, we believe is user friendly for people, so they can really find the CSA that matches their particular need.
How is that doing over the year? Are we finding that we're increasing the number of CSAs each year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean our list. If it's any, you know, reflection on the amount of CSAs, you know, that are on our list, yes, I think that, you know, you do see some farms, you know, drop out and realize that maybe the CSA model is not for them. But we definitely see, you know, a big expansion, because it's a good thing for the farm, and it's a good thing for the consumer. It really helps the farmer when they need the help most. It helps them, you know, because they have a big investment early on, you know, buying seedlings or plants and equipment and things like that. And, you know, you're really kind of kickstarting them and getting them capital when they need it most, you know, instead of, you know, they have to invest the money and then wait to, you know, get the money when the, you know, potatoes or watermelons or something come to harvest several months later. So really it helps them. And then it helps the consumer by really aligning them, you know, with a farm. You know, you in essence become part of the farm. You know, you interact with them. You find out what's happening on the farm on a regular basis. Most CSAs have activities where you can go to the farm and see what it's like. I mean, some CSAs, you know, even make their members, you know, come and do a little bit of work on the farm as part of being a part of the CSA. So it's a win-win for everyone.
That's Rob Gardner from The Local Beat, and that's LOCALBEET. And you spell out the whole world, thelocalbeat.com, and you'll find his articles. What you working on that's interesting right now?
Well, I think the main stuff that, you know, we're trying to get out there right now is you know, the CSAs and how to use it best and highlight, you know, some like how you can find CSAs by your location, some of the kind of specialized CSAs. So we're trying to get that out there. We have a piece where we've collected a lot of consumer feedback and trying to help people, you know, really pick the best CSA. So those are some of the things.
Oh, yeah, that's actually a really good point, that you are soliciting input from people who, you know, get their community-supported agriculture shares. And what are their experiences like? Now, you're not actually rating them, but you're just kind of collecting what they've experienced.
Right, right. It's a, you know, it's very unscientific, but, you know, we want people to, you know, hear from other people what they liked about CSAs, and also be able to kind of point them, you know, what kind of questions to ask, you know, what, because, you know, sometimes people have experiences with CSAs that are maybe not practical or reasonable, and also help them understand, you know, what are the parameters, what are the limitations, so, you know, what are the questions, what are the right expectations. So when they see the feedback, they really can use it best.
We've got just a couple of minutes here, Rob. We would be remiss if we didn't mention Family Farmed Expo, which is coming up in just a couple of weeks. I'm going to be speaking there. You're part of that as well.
Right. I'm really excited. This is the third year that I've been a presenter at the Expo. I'm on a panel this year with some real celebrities in the world of food preservation, including Tara Brachman, Vicky Nowicki, and Paul Verrant. So I think, you know, I'm out there with the stars when it comes to the world of preservation and making your food last year round, and talking about how you can eat local, not just in the summer but year round.
I'm going to be involved with a talk called Small Space Gardening: How to Grow Food in Your Backyard, on Rooftops, Back Porches, in the Container, in a Bathtub, in a Shoe, on the Back Porch, wherever you want to grow. So there's a lot of great seminars going on, and it's 3 days of events at Family Farmed Expo. I'm going to be talking about this the Sunday before the event, which is March 17th to 19th at the UIC Forum, University of Illinois at Chicago. And you can go to familyfarmedexpo.com to find out more of that. Rob and I will both be there and doing our best to get people on the healthy food track.
Yeah, and also the Local Beat with Slow Food Chicago is going to have a booth. And we will have a hard copy of our CSA guide for those people who, you know, that still need to have.
Fabulous. You know, that's great. So you can take it home and keep it handy. Well, that's great. Rob, always a pleasure talking to you. I will see you at Family Farmed, and you'll be back on the show, I'm sure.
Okay. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Have a great Sunday.
You too.
Bye-bye. Cut him off there. Hate to do that. Okay, let's bring this puppy in. Three-point landing.
One more tidbit of information about the Fernwood Project. Apparently, they have a partnership with the Morton Arboretum. So if you're a member of the Morton Arboretum, you can get in there with your membership card with the Arboretum.
That's great. At the Fernwood Botanical Gardens next Saturday, I'm going to be there with Beth Botts and Roy Diblick and Chris Woods, and it's going to be a fun day on March 5th. I will see you next week. At this point of the program, we say go green
or go home.
See you next week.